You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. What a fascinating, albeit somewhat depressing, game late Monday evening for the Rockets in Los Angeles. The three-game winning streak is now over. The Rockets 113-102 losers to the Clippers in LA. Rockets falling to 30-12 on the year, still with four games of separation in the loss column in a battle for the West number two seed. That's between themselves and San Antonio and Minnesota, their two closest challengers. The Clippers have now won 11 of 14 games. They're 22-21 on the year. And if the season ended today, the Clippers would be the number seven seed in the Western Conference, which would put them on course for a first-round series with the Rockets, who now they're 2-0 against. We'll talk about that throughout the program. I'm personally not as down on the matchup as a lot of other folks are, but I want to lead off with what everyone is talking about today, whether you stayed up late last night, because of course it was a very late game on Monday night, MLK Day. So I know some of you didn't see it, but if you didn't see it live, I'm sure you saw it play out on Twitter when you woke up this morning on this icy day in Houston. And that's what happened after the game. Because folks, the result, we'll talk about it, of course. We're your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball. So sure, we want to talk about what happens on the floor. But at the end of the day, it's 1 out of 82. The real story last night was what happened off the floor. So I want to address that from the top. And in case anyone has not seen the report already, go to ESPN.com. Adrian Wojnarowski, the best reporter in the business, just happened to be in LA last night. Got the scoop that after the game, four Rockets, James Harden, Trevor Ariza, Gerald Green, and who am I forgetting? Oh, Chris Paul, who allegedly led them through a secret tunnel, went to confront the Clippers in their locker room after the game. It did not get physical. Security was able to get in there and separate the teams before it did. But clearly the Rockets were not at all satisfied with how situations were dealt with during the game. They felt the need to go in and defend themselves. There's even a hilarious anecdote as while this was going on, because Chris Paul, a former Clipper, knows Staples Center well, took them down one of the back tunnels to get to the LA locker room. Clint Capella, then wondering where his teammates were, went and knocked on the front door of the Clipper locker room to see what was going on. Someone opened the door, saw it was Clint Capella, who's a pretty intimidating guy at 6'10", then shut it in his face. Just a pretty fortunately, we can laugh about it. I'm sure you've all seen the GIFs on Twitter, the reactions, and we can laugh about it because it didn't get physical. There was no long-lasting result. I don't want to say it's impossible for there to be a suspension, but if there are any suspensions, I would expect them to be of the one-game variety. Fortunately, security did its job, and I would never advocate violence. One of the sources, according to Woj, said it was classic NBA, that no one was actually willing to fight. It was more about making a statement. And from that standpoint, I'm pleased that the Rockets did it. There were several moments throughout the game that it got chippy. Of course, it was the first game for Chris Paul, who led the Rockets in scoring 19 points, also had 7 assists and 6 rebounds. It was his first game back at Staples Center to play the Clippers, his old team. And it got chippy from time to time between he and Blake Griffin, who I think most of us around the NBA realize did not have a good relationship. But there were two things in the second half of the game as the Clippers began to pull away that really stood out. First, there were players on the bench led by Austin Rivers and Pat Beverly who were not playing due to injury, but yet were incredibly cheeky. And it wasn't just routine trash talk, although you know, especially with Beverly and also Rivers involved, allegedly Austin Rivers and Blake Griffin were the guys that the Rockets went into the locker room seeking out and wanting to confront. But those guys on the bench in street clothes, besides just normal talking trash, which is kind of ridiculous and weak, or you're not even able to play in the game. But in addition to that, folks, they were on the court. I retweeted screenshots. There were times that actually they even grabbed a couple of times, made contact with Trevor Ariza. That's why I thought he in particular was not pleased by what was going on that bench. And the officials had every opportunity to step in and take control of the situation. They did not. They didn't even whistle the Clippers for a tee. For the bench essentially being on the court for long stretches of the second half. It was the Clippers Super Bowl. I guess good for them. They were able to get the win. But there were a lot of unprofessional things happening, and the officials did not properly defuse and take care of the situations. The flip side, boy, with 4 minutes left, Blake Griffin, he's the other part of this equation. According to Mike D'Antoni, he thinks that Blake intentionally made contact with him. If you review the slow-mo camera, I've retweeted some of that onto my timeline. It sure looks like, and you can see D'Antoni react live saying, F you, which is something that I've followed Mike a long time. He's usually a very stoic guy, takes a lot other than typical just barking at the officials. I have never seen Mike D'Antoni turn on an opposing player or coach like that. So for D'Antoni to elicit that, for that to elicit that reaction out of D'Antoni tells you that it was a pretty serious situation, and somehow Griffin was not even ejected for that. Now, he was eventually ejected in a skirmish with about a minute left between Griffin and Trevor Ariza, and that probably spilled over into the locker room. But I think the key theme in this, there were some continuing themes, most notably with Blake Griffin and the guys on the bench, led by Austin Rivers, that were not properly addressed by the officiating crew during the game. I think the Rockets, did they seek out a fight? Probably not. As the source told Woj, I think it was a lot of classic NBA barking. But I think they wanted to make a statement, and truth be told, I have no problem with them doing that, because folks, the officials had every opportunity to take control of this game, and they didn't. So if you work within the proper channels, and those channels don't do their job to kind of diffuse the situation, at some point you do need to stand up for yourself, and that's what I think the Rockets did. By the way, these two teams play again in Houston on, I believe, February 28th, another nationally televised game, and I think we can all look forward to seeing that and how it's going to play out when these two teams get back together on the basketball floor again, following, of course, what happened post-game last night. I should also note one more angle that I think added to the frustration. During the game, if you watch this, Blake Griffin was all over the officials throughout the game over alleged missed calls. I think it was one of those, with Griffin, you could tell the intensity was there. And kudos to Blake. Whatever I think of him off the court, on it, he was fantastic. 29 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists, 11 of 22 shooting. It was a statement game for him, and props to Blake. It played well. Well, throughout the game, you could hear him demonstratively cursing in the direction of the officials. Was he literally cursing them out? I don't know about that, but certainly he was using a lot of profanities, objecting to calls on a regular basis, yet was not even hit with a T for his objections. Whereas Gerald Green, one of the first times that he objected in the second half over, in my opinion, what actually was a blown call, got a T immediately for the same reaction that Griffin was allowed to do 5 or 10 times throughout the night without repercussions. So I think there was just a growing resentment from the Rockets over how the officials did not properly take care of situations during the game. And I think that's what led them to want to defend themselves, to stand up for themselves, because, folks, they went through the right channels. The officials had every opportunity to keep this game in check. They did not do that. There was a lot of frustration. It spilled over, and what happened happened. Now, as far as what it means going forward, it would not shock me if the players who went into the Clippers side of the facilities ended up receiving a one-game suspension. I don't think they deserve it. I hope they don't, because there was no physical contact. The situation was resolved, and it's not like this is unheard of. Look at one of the earlier games on MLK Day when Ben Simmons and Kyle Lowry allegedly tried to get together after the game and settle a score from events that happened on the floor. This is not unheard of. Now, my fear is that based on the visibility of this event, based on how high profile it was, we also have the Twitter reaction that the league is going to want to come down heavy-handed to discourage anything from eventually getting out of control in the future. But folks, even if there are suspensions, I don't expect it to be more than one game. I think one game is the absolute max based on the lack of physical contact. And at the end of the day, I know we follow the Rockets here at Locked On Rockets on a regular basis, but 82 games, it's a long season. Every game is 1 out of 82. Right now, the Rockets have 4 games of separation between themselves and the San Antonio Spurs and the Lost Column, also the Minnesota Timberwolves, who they play on Thursday night, the next game. And where I'm going with that is, even if the Rockets lose that game, look, it's pretty unlikely that one game, especially if you can concede that the race for the number one seed and catching the Warriors now 3 games clear of the Rockets, that one game is probably not going to make the difference in terms of your playoff seeding. We seem to kind of have a hierarchy in the Western Conference in which the Rockets seem to have a lot of buffer on both sides of them as far as not being able to move up to number one, but also not being able to fall to number three. At the end of the day, every game is one of 82. And I think for the Rockets, this was about more than one individual game. They felt like they needed to stand up for themselves. And if it hurts their odds at one particular game against the Minnesota Timberwolves in January, well, I think it would be unfortunate. I hope it doesn't happen. I just have a feeling the NBA, given the spotlight, may want to come down a little heavy-handed on this. It's unfortunate, but I don't think it's something that's all of a sudden just is at a hugely negative impact on the remainder of the season, the Rockets' odds, what they're trying to accomplish. If anything, it might make the other players on the court play even harder, the same way you saw the Clippers treating this game with Super Bowl intensity based, of course, on a lot of their former Rocket connections, or for the other guys in the Clipper locker room wanting to play Chris Paul, probably the best player in franchise history, in his first game against the team back at Staples. So that's sort of the post-game fight analysis. I'm saying fight in air quotes. You can't see it because, of course, no punches were thrown. It actually didn't get physical, but certainly it's the lead storyline all over Twitter today or wherever you consume your news. I'm sure you're seeing lots of people talk about it just because it is fascinating. The rest of the show, I do want to transition to talking about the actual basketball, because while the skirmish angle is interesting, and I think there's some things to be taken out of it, most notably the Rockets standing up for themselves, the sense of teamwork, the sense of pride they have to defend one another, I think all of those things are good from an overall team culture standpoint. At the same time, I know we're a basketball show, and long-term, whether the Rockets can accomplish their goals this season is going to depend more on what happens on the floor than what happens off of it. And in this game, there's a few ways that you can look at it, but the bottom line is the Rockets, without James Harden, just did not have enough firepower to keep up with what the Clippers did. The Clippers had 60 points combined from Blake Griffin and Lou Williams, 29 from Blake, 31 from Lou, who has just played insanely well. Lou last night, 12 of 19 from the field, remarkably efficient, getting his 31 points. That's, of course, on the heels of him scoring 50 at Golden State last week. And you do have to give the Clippers a lot of credit. I said when the game ended, to me, it was annoying. It was an annoying and frustrating loss, but it was not one that I would panic over. Keep in mind, the Clippers have won 11 of their past 14 basketball games, including that 19-point win at Golden State last week. I know the talent, especially without DeAndre Jordan, does not seem to be there, but this is a team that's red hot from the perimeter. They shot 40-plus from three again, and when you combine that with the level of energy that they were playing with on Monday evening, a lot of former Rockets, and then even those that aren't former Rockets, of course, have all sorts of connections to Chris Paul. Combine just their overall level of being hot with that energy, and they were a very difficult team for the Rockets without James Harden to score with. And there's going to be a tendency, I think, for the Rockets, or the fans, I think, to break it down as a game in which the defensive miscues held them down. And that was a part of it, certainly. But I think the offense stood out more than anything else. The Clippers had, as I said, 60 points combined from those two guys. The Rockets just did not have any sort of dynamic scoring impact. Chris Paul did have 19 points, 8 of 17 shooting. He was tied for the scoring lead with Eric Gordon, who also had 19. However, Eric was just 7 of 21 from the field and 3 of 9 from behind the arc. Trevor Ariza, he was a positive, 17 points, 5 of 11 from the field, 4 of 8 from 3. Ryan Anderson was below 50%. P.J. Tucker was below 50%. And then you look at the two guards, Eric Gordon and Gerald Green. The theme for a while with the Rockets and the absence of Harden has been Gerald Green and Eric Gordon sort of picking up the slack. In the last two games, they've had their regression. As we mentioned earlier, Eric was 7 of 21. Gerald was just 4 of 14. So combined, 11 of 35 and 4 of 17 from behind the arc. That's just not good enough. They did score a combined 30 points, but they were very efficient in doing so. And when that happens without James Harden, they're just not nearly the firepower, unless guys like Ryan, PJ, unless you just have an otherworldly game shooting from behind the arc. And the Rockets certainly did not have that on Monday evening. They were just 13 of 44 from deep. So you've seen a regression to the mean, I think, from both Eric and Gerald to start this run without James when they had initially had won 5 of 7 heading into Monday night. You had a lot of games in which the hot shooting from those veteran guys offset a lot of your traditional limitations. Well, with the sample size expanding, they have had their regression. That's a possibility that Matt Bullard mentioned on this show last week. And the last couple of games, it's hit the Rockets pretty hard. And Monday, the Clippers had just too much firepower for them to keep up. The Clippers did score 59 points in the first half. That's what gave them a lead at the half. They never trailed in the second half. But in the fourth quarter, the Rockets only gave up 21 points to the Clippers, and that included some technical free throws in there. Problem is that the Rockets only scored 18 themselves. It just felt like a game very similar to, I would say, the loss at Detroit, which was the last loss the Rockets had suffered before this one on Saturday the 4th, I believe. And that was when the Rockets came out, scored 37 in the first quarter, but the offense just slowly ground to a halt as the game moved forward, only at 84 points with 4 minutes left in the game. And this one felt very similar in that in the fourth quarter, there was just no consistent scoring option, whereas the Clippers, they could either dump it to Blake on the low block, they could allow Lou to throw anything in. It seemed like no matter what angle shot Lou put up, he was able to get it to go down, and the scoring punch was just not there for the Rockets. And really, short of getting James Harden back, I'm not sure where you can say they clearly should have done more. Certainly, you'd like to see Eric Gordon make three or four more shots. Now, he should have not gotten credit for a miss on a key play in the fourth quarter in which there was a blatant goaltend that wasn't called, would have cut the deficit to five. Instead, because of that, the Clippers were able to get a transition run out, were able to get an and one on the other end, and what should have been a five-point game immediately became a 10-point game, and that was pretty much the best chance for the Rockets that had come and gone, and I think that contributed to some of the emotions that spilled out after the game. Another example of the Rockets trying to do everything they could to handle business properly on the court, and the officials not doing their job to hold the Clippers accountable for their miscues, be it on-court miscues or off-court in terms of their behavior. And I know we're talking about basketball here, we're not talking about the off-court things anymore, but I do think there's just an overall sense of frustration from the Rockets that the officials were not holding the Clippers accountable for a lot of their issues last night. But regardless, even if Eric is not charged with a miss for that, it's just one shot. He was not all the way there, but the Clippers do have some long, rangy defenders with length, and it's not like it's been a banner year from Eric from behind the arc anyway. I think the bigger takeaway is that, folks, when you have two dynamic scorers, which Blake Griffin and Lou Williams were last night, it's going to be tough for the Rockets without James Harden's 32 points and 9 assists per game to be able to keep up. That's just the reality. They've done a pretty good job, and it's kind of overlapped with an easier time in the schedule getting through these 2 weeks. Rockets now 4-3 in the 7 games that Harden has not played. They've done a pretty good job of staying afloat, but as I said, it coincided with a weak spot in the schedule. Against tougher teams, it's a matter of many times just keeping up with them. The Rockets did not have the firepower to do that. I think if there's one guy that you could be critical of, I wouldn't say so much that it's Eric Gordon or Gerald Green, because as I said, they've had some pretty brilliant games lately as well. I think for those two, you just had just some natural regression that's gone on the past two games. If there's one guy to be critical of, I would say it's probably Clint Capella, who had 14 points, 7 rebounds. I think I said 10 and 7 earlier. I was looking at his minus 10. Excuse me if I was errant in that assessment. But yeah, 14 and 7 looks respectable on 6 of 10 shooting, but he was a minus 10 in his 28 minutes. And overall, he was just not nearly enough of a difference maker on both ends of the floor. There were some pretty telling comments after the first quarter from Mike D'Antoni. Rockets came out, played pretty well offensively in the first quarter, scored 31 points, but they were only up by one because the Clippers scored 30. And in the sideline interview that they're required to do on these national games, again, this was a TNT national broadcast, D'Antoni was asked by the sideline reporter about the defense giving up 30 points, and the first thing out of his mouth was that Clint needs to do a better job of protecting the rim. And then he added, we need to do a better job, referring to the perimeter guys, of not letting them in there. But the first thing out of his mouth was the lack of rim protection. And in this game, it felt like the Clippers just stretched him out. They started Willie Reed at the center spot, but he only played 10 minutes. Montrezl Harrell at 32 minutes off the bench. He was one of the key bodies that played major minutes. Montrez, one of those former Rockets, 10 points, 6 rebounds. But essentially, the Clippers went with some very non-traditional lineups. They tried to get their playmakers in space, and Clint did just not respond as you would like him to. The past couple of games, and the best theory I've got is that Clint had gotten kind of lulled into more of a traditional game against those bully bigs, as I like to call them. We've discussed that on the post-game shows. Chicago with Robin Lopez, Portland with Nurkic, Phoenix with Tyson Chandler. There were a lot of games, and Clint played very, very well against some of your more traditional centers that those teams throw out you. The Clippers essentially said, we're not going to go that route. The Clippers went pace and space, and Clint just looked overall unprepared for the responsibilities that came with making plays away from the bucket, particularly with Montrezl Harrell in his 32 minutes, a guy that can space the floor a little bit and make plays off the dribble and away from the basket. I would caution anyone from making any sort of declarative statements because it is just one game of 82. But as far as games went, this was one, if you're in the camp of the Rockets, adding another rim protector such as Andrew Bogut, who's out there now, or anyone else such as Tyson Chandler that might possibly get bought out by the end of February, this was a game that might make you think about adding more rim protection because Clint, for whatever reason, he did not have it on the defensive end. Offensively, he was okay, but did not score nearly enough on the low block to give the Rockets the scoring punch they needed to offset all the scoring that was happening on the other end. And, of course, the absence of James Harden. Bench guys, Luke Bamute, Tarik Black, they came back. Luke, first time playing in over a month, which is great to see, but naturally, as we expected, there was some rust. And then when you look at the center spot, Tarik Black, certainly he tries hard, but there's just some physical limitations with his lack of height, and Nene is still out with that bruised knee, and even when Nene does play, this is a guy who's 35 years old and has had a very inconsistent season, to put it mildly. So this was a game, if you don't trust Clint Capela, and I'm not going to say that, because to me it's one game out of 82, everyone has a bad game here and there, but if you don't trust Clint Capela, this is a game that should have reminded you just how much the Rockets could use a rim protector, because in general, Lou Williams, Teodosic, obviously Blake Griffin, there was just far too many easy shots in the lane for the Clippers in this game. And while I think the Rockets' lack of firepower was the biggest storyline, I think defense certainly was not, especially early in the game, where you would expect it to be either. And to me, Clint Capela, last night at least, was the biggest culprit in that. Now for the final segment of our 3 points recap, I'm going to focus on bigger picture. We led off discussing, of course, the post-game altercation, then moved on to the X's and O's of the game, which, as I said, to me, there's not really that much exciting to discuss. The Clippers just had overall more talent last night. They executed better. The Rockets, without James Harden, did not have the firepower to keep up unless they either shot very well from three, they were just 13 of 44, or had a dynamic defensive game. Neither of those happened, and it's a frustrating loss because the Rockets, you know, you can point to two or three plays, they go differently, and maybe it's there for the taking at the very end. But folks, the Clippers are a good team, winning record now. They've won 11 in their past 14 games, and for the Rockets, without James Harden on the road, it's tough for me to say that this was a terribly bad or discouraging performance. Yet, because the Clippers have won so many games of late, and they're 22-21, that now puts them into the number 7 seed in the Western Conference, which, if the season ended today, would match them with the Rockets in the first round. And based on the first two games, the Clippers are 2-0 against Houston. And I know there's naturally a little bit of fear saying, well, is that a tough matchup in the first round? And that's what I want to address, because in my opinion, that's being overblown. I know the Clippers are 2-0, but fluky things happen when you look at the small sample size over an 82-game season. A lot of it depends on exactly when you draw a team. First and foremost, the two games the Clippers have played the Rockets, the first game they were without Chris Paul, the second game they were without James Harden. First game, and I'm not even going to address the protest angles of it, which were pretty bad in and of itself, some of the officiating issues that went down. But that's neither here nor there. Let's give the Clippers credit, because they played well. The reason I don't think this really translates to the playoffs in terms of the matchup between the two teams, there's a couple reasons for it. First, in the regular season, if you treat a game like it's your Super Bowl, that level of energy oftentimes does translate to better expected results on the basketball floor. For the Clippers, all the former Rockets, we mentioned Montrezl Harrell, Sam Decker, Pat Beverley, who didn't play but certainly is a big part of their energy off the bench and what he's trying to get them to do. There are a lot of connections. Then you throw in the Chris Paul angle, specifically with Blake Griffin, who I think we all know did not exactly see eye to eye with Chris Paul when he was in LA. You throw in those angles, and over the course of an 82-game year, yes, that's going to make a difference. In the playoffs, I don't think it does, because in the playoffs, everybody is giving you their best shot on a nightly basis. Everyone is dialed in. From the standpoint of the Rockets, now maybe the next time they play the Clippers, after what happened post-game, they're going to bring that intensity. But I think this, I don't want to say the Rockets took it lightly, but they took it as one of 82, which most teams do over the course of a season. It's kind of, for the Clippers, the Rockets are what the Warriors are for many other teams. From the standpoint of, when you see that team on your calendar, you treat it like a Game 7. And again, with the Clippers, they do have upside. I don't mean this to talk bad about them as a basketball team because, again, they've won 11 of 14. They actually won by 19 at Golden State a week ago. So there is some upside, especially when Lou Williams is playing at this absurd level. And whether it's sustainable or not, 31 points on 12 of 19 shooting and 9 assists, that's all-star-level production in his 40 minutes. Right now, they've got a pretty strong 1-2 punch with Lou and Blake, and so you tip your hat to them. But when you look at the role players, there's a level of energy that they bring that the Rockets did not match. And sure, you can say, well, it'd be nice if the Rockets had more energy, blah, blah, blah. But folks, it's one game out of 82. You're not going to have that every night over the 82-game grind. When the Clippers play the Rockets, they do. And so I think that's partially in addition to the injuries the Rockets have had with James Harden last night and Chris Paul in December. I think that's led to the results that you've seen. In the playoffs, that's not really going to be a factor because everyone takes every playoff game about as seriously as you can. So I think one kind of artificial advantage Clippers have in the regular season is just kind of the intensity when these two teams play. That goes away in the playoffs. And then beyond that, folks, it's just a matter of getting your two superstars out there when you're in Houston. That's where the Rockets have the Clippers beat, is that you have multiple top 10 players. Now, as we said, the Clippers right now, they have two guys that are playing at a pretty incredible level themselves with Lou Williams and Blake Griffin. But I think over the balance of Lou Williams' career, you can see that that's not really a sustainable level of production from Lou. Now, he's been incredible for the past month or so, but I think at some point he's going to regress. He's 31 years old to the player he's generally been over his veteran NBA career. And while that's certainly a useful player, is not nearly at the level of Chris Paul or James Harden. You tip your hat to him for last night, but is it sustainable? Can you expect to see that in the playoffs? In my opinion, no. That's unreasonable. I think Lou is going to fall back to earth in much the same way we've seen the past couple of weeks. Eric Gordon and Gerald Green fall back to earth on the Rockets' end. It's just, unfortunately, the Rockets caught the Clippers and Lou Williams at a bad time, and credit to the Clippers, they took advantage. However, I don't really take that much predictive value in terms of what it means when these two teams play in the playoffs. Also, the December game, in addition to not having Chris Paul, James Harden did score 50+. The Rockets ended up losing that game anyway in Houston. I would point out that was when the Rockets were in the middle of their 5-game losing streak. They lost to the Lakers the night before, or the game before, two nights before in Toyota Center. They also almost lost to the Lakers on New Year's Eve. So let's not make it sound like the Rockets were fully clicking at that point, and then the Clippers just came into Houston and rolled them. No, the Rockets had a lot of problems. Luke Bamute didn't play, which is certainly a big part of their defense. And as I said, even though he came back for this most recent game against the Clippers, after missing more than a month of basketball, there's going to be a lot of rust. He's not going to be all the way back on day one. By the way, one final Luke note I want to throw in there. He did take a couple of shots on the shoulder. He played physical, bounced back every time. So that was a really good thing to see. The rust is still there, but physically, he got tested with that shoulder. It was a chippy physical game, and he bounced back. So to me, that bodes really well in terms of him truly being past this shoulder injury in the Rockets. It was a more conservative timeline than they initially said with Luke. 2 to 3 weeks, ended up being over a month. But thankfully, they were able to get this injury, in my opinion, completely healed up. And so I think he's put that behind him. But getting back to the point, which is comparing the Rockets and the Clippers, he didn't play in that December game. Neither did Chris Paul. And it's not like the Rockets as a team were playing well at that point. So, no, I don't think the Clippers, they certainly have not beat a full-strength Rockets team, but in addition to that, they haven't beat a Rockets team that was even playing especially well at the time. I guess you could say last night they did, because the Rockets had won 5 of 7 going into the game, and 3 in a row, but I think there are extenuating circumstances to that as well, particularly when you look at Lou Williams shooting 12 of 19, your shooting guard, Blake Griffin shooting 50%. And the Clippers as a whole shooting 40% from behind the arc. They played with an incredible amount of energy and execution. Kudos to them. They deserve the win. But when you look at this, I don't really see any matchup that's especially troublesome long term. I think the biggest factors why the Clippers have won these two games are just fortunate timing on their part between the injuries and the Rockets not playing that well. And then the obvious takeaways of both Chris Paul and James Harden being out for one of those two games. When the Rockets are at full strength, I don't really see this as a matchup problem. I don't want to say the Rockets can't lose, because certainly the Clippers are a talented team, but I don't see anything in the matchup that's especially poor. As I said, from my standpoint, it was very reminiscent of the Rockets-Detroit game, and I don't think any of you would fear the Pistons if hypothetically you could play an Eastern team in the playoffs. The Rockets without James Harden, if they're not clicking from the perimeter, if you have both Eric Gordon and Gerald Green cold, you're not really making up for the production in terms of them going off, you're as a team sluggish from three, it's going to be tough without James Harden's 32 points and 9 assists. You're going to feel that from time to time. There's a reason he's the MVP frontrunner, because he is that valuable. And so when you look at these teams, again, it reminded me a lot of that Rockets-Detroit game from earlier in this month, and that was less about the opponent, more about the Rockets just didn't have it, and it's probably not reasonable to expect them to have it on a nightly basis until they get James Harden back. And as we close out the show, the silver lining, if you actually read Adrian Wojnarowski's news story about the Rockets, which of course was led by the post-game skirmish that we talked about leading off the show, he mentioned that the objective for the Rockets, they think that James is going to return on Thursday against the Timberwolves. Now, we'll see, because James was involved in the postgame stuff. There's a slight chance he could be suspended for that. But, folks, if he returns Thursday or even Saturday, that's less than a three-week absence for a grade 2 hamstring strain. That is a phenomenal recovery in today's NBA. No, I don't think he's pushing it, because I don't think the Rockets would do that with their franchise player. I also don't really see an incentive for them to rush, considering that there's a three-game buffer between themselves and the Warriors for the one seed, and four games of separation between themselves and the Spurs and Timberwolves for the number two, the Spurs and Timberwolves being at the three spot. So it's not like the Rockets are just desperate for every single game. I don't think they would rush James back. I think they're putting him back there because, thankfully, James is a really fast healer, as he's been with many other injuries over his career. And so I don't think you should be waiting for the other shoe to drop. I think you should really be feeling pretty good about that. And big picture, the Rockets, they survived this stretch. It wasn't always pretty. But, folks, they were 4-3. We should really call them 5-3 without James Harden, because James went down with a minute left in the Laker game when the Rockets were down by 3 points, and the Rockets had to overcome that win in double overtime without him. So, essentially, the Rockets won 5 of 8 basketball games that were decided without James Harden being on the floor. So if he returns Thursday, all in all, the Clipper loss, while not fun, it did drop the Rockets 30-12 on the year and snap the three-game winning streak. On the balance of their time, when you factor in you're missing a guy that averages 32-plus points and 9-plus assists per game, all in all, it's tough to feel that down about what the Rockets have been able to do over these past few weeks. So with that, I will wrap up our abbreviated post-game show right there. As always, thanks to you guys for listening. If you want to follow me on a more real-time basis, the best place to do that is Twitter. I'm at Ben Dubose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. Or if you want any kind of longer questions, then Facebook or email is probably the best way to do that. With Facebook, it's facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. Leave us a comment. Email, it's LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better program for you, the diehard Rockets fan. Also, if you have not left us a 5-star review at your listening platform of choice, please do that. That's the best way we can remain viable to potential advertisers and have their money coming in to make this the best show it can be, and really the only daily podcast covering your Houston Rockets. So iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Megaphone, wherever you listen, leave us a 5-star review in addition to subscribing, and that's going to help us become even more viable to advertisers in the weeks and months ahead as we continue bringing this program to you, as we said, the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. One final plug, LockedOnRockets.com. That's our new website. Got lots of news stories, podcast coverage, everything we do you can find there. So if you're not bookmarking that and going to it ever so often, I strongly encourage you to do that as well. That's the best way you can support me here and what we're trying to bring you as part of this awesome Locked On Podcast Network. So for now, I will wrap things right there. Once again, the unhappy final from LA, Clippers 113, Rockets 102. Clippers moved to 22-21 on the year, 7 seed the West. Rockets fall to 30-12, still number 2 seed in the West. Rockets not in action on Thursday night against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Oh, before I sign off, one final plug that I should have thrown out there. We do have a listener party coming up in, 10 days, I believe? Yeah, next Friday, the 26th, over at Nick's Place in West Houston. That's the Westheimer/Gessner area. We're having a listener party. We're also calling it Rockets Twitter Party. Basically, if you listen to this show, if you're active in the Rockets online community, come out and watch a game with us. It's going to be fun. We're going to have volume. There's going to be food and drink specials. It's a very good environment. Tons of TVs. Yes, there will be volume. So I would love to meet you guys. And in addition to meeting me, it's just a great time getting to know the Rockets fans. We did it last year for the playoffs. Went very well. So I think we're going to start trying to do it for a few regular season this campaign as well. And then, of course, we'll have some for playoff road games in addition to all the stuff we do in the regular season. But this will be our first one of the 2018 season. So if I haven't met you yet, or if you want to meet me again and hang out with other Rockets fans, I would certainly love to see you out there. Again, that's Friday the 26th at Nick's Place out in West Houston. The address is 2713 Rocky Ridge. So folks, until tomorrow, I will wrap up right there. Again, 113-102, the final Rockets Clippers in LA on Monday evening. Rockets falling 230-12 on the season. Next in action, Thursday night against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Another nationally televised game, but this one from the friendly confines of Toyota Center in Houston, kicks off a three-game homestand, all against quality opponents, with the Timberwolves, Warriors, and Miami Heat all coming to town over the next week. I think we'll have a show for you tomorrow, some sort of interview. I'm trying to line that up right now to talk about not just the Clipper game, but big picture. What have we learned with the Rockets, who have now passed the halfway point of the year at 30-12. So stay tuned for that. And then, of course, Thursday, we'll be back into our normal post-game mode covering what happens between the Rockets and Timberwolves. And the Timberwolves actually being their closest competitor now. They have moved ahead of the Spurs to the number three spot in the Western Conference. So lots to discuss in the days ahead. For now, I will sign off. Folks, if you're in Houston, be safe. There's a lot of ice, supposed to be snow later today. So hopefully take it easy today. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you let me be a part of your ice day, thanks for that. And then hopefully tomorrow we'll all be getting back to normal, both weather-wise and then the Rockets getting back home to Houston. And with James Harden set to return, we'll be hopefully getting back to the form the Rockets have been in for most of this season, which has the Rockets at 30-12 through their first 42 games. So until then, folks, have a good one, and we'll be talking again very soon right here on Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.